and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, March 14, 2024. The Biden administration announces visa restrictions on individuals blocking the road to peace in South Sudan.
We are trying to change, even working very closely with the United States of America. With the embassy in Dubai, we are working very closely on a daily basis. Visa restrictions are referred to who now? Because we have not seen the names.
And lawmakers in the United States are expected to vote on the fate of a Chinese short video app, TikTok.
Today, we send a clear message that we will not tolerate our adversaries weaponizing our freedoms against us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. State Department announced steps Wednesday to impose visa restrictions on multiple individuals in South Sudan for what they call undermining or impeding a sustainable peace by engaging in corruption that fuels conflict in South Sudan. The State Department said under Section 212A3C of the Immigration and Nationality Act, these individuals will be generally ineligible for visas to the United States. The statement adds that certain family members of such persons may also be subjected to these restrictions. South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, James Morgan, says his office has not received the names of the individuals who will be affected by the new development from Washington. Ambassador Morgan says the attitudes of the Kiir administration towards the United States has changed.
It does not surprise us because at the moment we are trying to improve our relations with the United States. The obstruction of peace in South Sudan is no longer an option now, because what we are doing, we are finalizing the agreement. The lifespan of the agreement is coming to an end. Because as the U.S. State Department knows very well that this is the time, we are preparing to go for elections. The agreement is being implemented, and then we also had the issue of the roadmap, which also is coming to an end, and we have, from time to time, we have been in touch. We are trying to change, even working very closely with the United States of America. With the embassy in Dubai, we are working very closely on a daily basis. Visa restrictions are referred to who now? Because we have not seen the names.
The statement was clear that this restriction will be applicable to South Sudanese from across the political parties. It's not targeting the government. It's not targeting the people, but it's targeting individuals who are obstructing the road to peace. And they also said that the government has not created an environment for free and fair elections.
These are also not true. We are always in touch with the U.S. officials, including the embassy in Juba. We have made statements several times outlining the issues of the elections. Elections is not about one party show. It is the elections is not for parties. Elections are for the people of South Sudan. And the parties that are interested for elections are encouraged to do so, including the SPLM in the government, including all SPLM-IO and the rest of the other political parties that are signatories to the revitalized peace agreement. All of them, there is nothing that there is one party campaigning.
Honorable Minister, I watch the South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation on a daily basis, and it's an open secret that the SPLM in government is enjoying a lot of airtime on the national broadcaster as opposed to the other parties. When you say the environment is conducive for everybody to campaign, is that the sort of campaign that you are encouraging? One party enjoying airtime?
All the parties are aware that the year 2024 is the year for elections. If other political parties are aware that there's elections, and nobody has prevented any political party from doing whatever they want to do, nobody has been stopped from campaigning. If nobody has come to this SSBC, as you are saying, that South Sudan government enjoys a lot of airtime on the national TV, If you don't come to the national TV with your program, is it the government of South Sudan to go and bring you from your home, that you come to the TV and tell us what you want? Oh, it is the will of everybody in every party to come up with this program that I got this program.
What about the ban on gathering? Because it's an open secret that if you want to hold any rally, any gathering in South Sudan, you must get an approval of the national security.
At the time of elections like this, I've never seen that also. And nobody even has gone to the national security to ask for the gathering and were rejected. I don't think so. Because it is very clear that this is the time of election. Everybody is supposed to have its own activities.
SPLM in opposition, they have raised concerns about their safety, about their security, about some of their members being prevented from going to their respective constituencies. These are facts that have been there, Mr. Minister. I'm not making them.
I really don't know that this is the true stories. Let us be factual and let us tell the truth. John, I'm here in Juba. I'm no longer in Addis Ababa. I'm in Juba here. There is nobody who is being restricted from going anywhere here in this country.
How about the leader of the SPLM in opposition, who is also the first vice president of the country? Since he landed in Juba, he never left Juba, and it appears like he cannot do so.
Dr. Riak is here. Yes, you are right. He has not gone anywhere. But if you ask him what really makes you not to travel, he will not tell you that, yes, I'm not traveling. I'm not traveling because I'm restricted. Because to be honest, nobody restricts Dr. Riak. Nobody restricts him, to be honest with you. I mean, here in Juba.
But the members of his groups have come up openly saying that their chairman is a prisoner in Juba.
Which is not true. I'd been hearing this mainly from the deputy speaker of the parliament. And the deputy speaker of the parliament will listen to this interview. He is not telling the truth. And I'm telling you, secondly, again, that he is not telling the truth. If he's telling the truth, let him call me to his office and tell me that this is ABCD, Dr. Riak is restricted.
There is also lack of freedom of speech in the country, which could definitely impact elections, because during election year, people are supposed to campaign and speak, but there's a restriction on freedom of speech in South Sudan. How do you react to that?
These stories are all really are not being supported by facts. You are asking the same questions that I always tell my other colleagues, other ambassadors who are here. And they always come to me and say, we understand there is a restriction of speech. I told them, the social media of South Sudan is the worst that you can find everybody being criticized. And people who are writing these speeches, criticizing the leadership, are here in Juba. You have never heard that one of them is being arrested because he's written a story against X and Y.
One government parastatal, that is the media authority, has imposed restrictions on who should work as a journalist in South Sudan. For instance, they are saying everybody who is supposed to work as a journalist in South Sudan must have studied media. Is that fair?
Even I have not seen anything like that, because I got people here who are journalists, and these people have never gone to the school of journalism. But they're journalists. The stories that we are hearing about South Sudan are the stories that are coming from outside. But these are stories when you come to South Sudan here.
This is not from outside, Honorable Minister. I normally go to South Sudan and I go and apply for accreditation at the Media Authority, and I work with colleagues who are South Sudanese who have not studied media, and the Media Authority declined to give them accreditation. I'm not making it here. This is a government institution refusing to give a South Sudanese national access to do his work.
I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that. But if that happens, let us find out exactly why this has happened and whether it exists or not. Let us also find out the facts, because my job here, I have to find facts, because I really want to be honest and sincere, so that whatever is being said about South Sudan, we have to be really educated about it, because some of the stories we are even taken by surprise. Like now, this one of the media, the one that we are talking about. I'm not aware of that these things exist.
That's James Morgan, South Sudan's Minister for Foreign Affairs. He spoke with me from Juba via WhatsApp earlier today. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill Wednesday that will force short video app TikTok, used by about 170 million Americans, to separate from its Chinese owner, ByteDance, or face a ban. But as VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, the bill faces significant criticism about restriction of free speech and may not pass in the U.S. Senate.
After years of concern about data privacy on the popular social media app, U.S. lawmakers took a key step Wednesday, calling for TikTok to separate from its Chinese parent company, ByteDance. Republican Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers.
Today, we send a clear message that we will not tolerate our adversaries weaponizing our freedoms against us.
With significant bipartisan support, the bill addresses concerns TikTok is a national security threat. Christopher Wray is the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Americans need to ask themselves whether they want to give the Chinese government the ability to control access to their data, whether they want to give the Chinese government the ability to control the information they get through the recommendation algorithm, and whether they want to give the Chinese government the ability to leverage the data.
The bill is passed.
TikTok has denied those allegations, calling the House bill a ban. The bill's co-sponsors push back against that claim. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy is the top Democrat on the House Select Committee on Strategic Competition with China.
Our intention is for TikTok to continue to operate, but not under the control of the Chinese Communist Party.
China condemned the vote Tuesday. Wang Wenbin is the spokesperson for the Chinese Foreign Ministry. Wenbin said the U.S. has not found any evidence of TikTok threatening national security and has never stopped going after TikTok. And many U.S. lawmakers and civil liberties groups say singling out the app is unfair and limits Americans' rights to free speech. Democratic Representative Robert Garcia.
Any ban on TikTok is not just banning the freedom of expression. You are literally causing huge harm to our national economy.
The TikTok legislation has revived the debate over data privacy and personal freedoms. American voter Cole Thomas.
There are bigger issues taking away from the American life than TikTok. People can't afford groceries and we're concerned about a social media app.
American voter Joe Judge.
Security for all of the platforms are just, they're under scrutiny right now, and I think for good reason. I don't have a lot of trust in the platforms and in the information that's provided these days. I'm just very concerned about the authenticity.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said committees would consider the bill, which could face significant legal challenges. Caitlin Chin Rothman researches the impact of technology on geopolitics at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The U.S. government would have a very, very difficult job of convincing a court that this ban is both narrowly tailored enough to advance this government interest of data privacy, but then also that there are no less restrictive measures that the government could have taken.
President Joe Biden has said he will sign the bill into law if it passes the U.S. Senate. The Biden campaign joined TikTok earlier this year to reach out to younger voters. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Still on social media issues, Al-Shabaab-affiliated websites and social media accounts continue to operate and publish the group's messages and statements despite relentless effort by the government in Somalia to close them down. At least two main websites, which regularly publish groups' statements and speeches, as well as social media accounts, have re-emerged after they were shut down a few weeks ago. Adam Hidley is the executive director of the Tech Against Terrorism, a not-for-profit organization based in London that focuses on disrupting the use of the internet by militants, including Al-Shabaab. He tells Harun Maruf of VOA's Somali language service that Al-Shabaab is one of the most sophisticated actors in terms of the ways that it uses the internet to share its material.
We have some technology that we've developed called the Terrorist Content Analytics Platform, which is designed to detect and alert terrorist content. And in any given week, around 20 to 25% of the content we find on the internet has likely been created by Al-Shabaab. And what Al-Shabaab does is it uses very large platforms and niche smaller platforms to host content. So what we're finding is that Al-Shabaab are trying very hard to have their material on Facebook, on Twitter, on Telegram, but also behind the scenes, they're sharing this material on fairly obscure platforms that are used to evade content moderation from the larger platforms. We're also finding that Al-Shabaab have a number of what we call terrorist-operated websites. And these are websites that have been set up and bought and are run by terrorists to share material. And increasingly, what we're finding is that terrorists, including Al-Shabaab, are using Telegram and their own websites increasingly. And this is extremely difficult to counter because Telegram often doesn't remove material particularly quickly, and where websites are concerned, it takes an awfully long time to understand where these sites are hosted and how they can be disrupted.
And who are the target of their materials, their output?
For the most part, the intended audience, we believe, is local and regional. And most of the materials are designed with local readers in mind. However, another factor at play here is that terrorist groups will often try to outperform with one another or compete with one another or to show that they're powerful or that they're having effect. So the purpose of terrorist propaganda is both projecting power domestically, but also projecting power internationally and regionally within the terrorist ecosystem, if that makes sense. And what we know about Al-Shabaab is that they have various connections with other terrorist groups, and the extent to which they're able to show that they exist, that they're having the impact that they intend, is a secondary objective of this material.
And regarding the impact, tell me the type of materials they are sharing, how dangerous, how successful are they in reaching their targets?
The sort of content that we're seeing is broad in scope. So it can range anything from reports about attacks and executions and bombings, all the way through to perhaps more subtle content relating to governance and political grievances that populations might have. So the type of content that Al-Shabaab creates and shares is pretty broad and is a broad spectrum of material that you'd expect from a sophisticated terrorist group. And Al-Shabaab is, at least in terms of the way it uses the internet, one of the leading terrorist groups.
That's Adam Hidley, the executive director of Tech Against Terrorism, a not-for-profit organization based in London that focuses on disrupting the use of the internet by militants, including Al-Shabaab. He spoke with Harun Maruf of VOA's Somali Language Service. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how helpful is media literacy? Stay tuned for an answer to that question after the break.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A conference is underway in Abuja to raise awareness about cybersecurity and investing in African data centers. In addition to training, the conference strives to integrate technology with other sectors of the economy, such as finance, healthcare, education, and transportation. To gain more insight, Paul Ndiho spoke to Hilary Dimesa, editor of Cyber News and Co. at the Center for Cyber Awareness and Development in Abuja, Nigeria.
Technology, no doubt, is changing narratives in how businesses are done, in how human activities are carried out, from farming, agriculture, to healthcare, to education, to communication. Technology is changing the landscape of the world entirely, and Africa is not left out of it. The COVID experience has shown the world that with technology, human beings are capable of achieving enormous things. And so looking at Africa specifically in terms of the challenges, in terms of the human capital required, technology can help Africa to leapfrog. Technology can help Africa to deliver better human services.
You are in a position where you talk to a lot of people in this space. What are their concerns? How do they want the cyber space, the tech sector? How do you see it being developed in Nigeria?
Tech space in Africa is fast evolving, and both regulatory authorities as well as users are beginning to see why Africa cannot be left out. In a way, technology is helping the quality of life to improve drastically and rapidly across Africa.
A lot of analysts who cover this space, yourself, talk about how data is going to be critical to advance this technology, especially artificial intelligence. In Africa, we have data there, but this data is not stored in the right places. This data is still written and hidden in some file somewhere. It's not digitized. How can we take advantage of the existing technology to harness that data?
Thank you so much, Paul, for that very incisive question. Now, data that is not refined is of no value. Data that is processed, data that is crystallized, data that is researched, data that is, are packaged in a way that the value of it would be usable for other social economic benefit is what he referred to. Otherwise, crude oil would not be of much significance to humanity except it is refined. So when data is refined, you get to know some dynamics, you get to understand some statistics that, okay, there are a number of children in this geopolitical region.
That's Hilary Dimesa, the director of Cyber News and Co. at the Center for Cyber Awareness and Development in Abuja, Nigeria. While U.S. President Joe Biden has continued to support Israel's war against Hamas, he appears to be distancing himself from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The apparent rift between the leaders has fueled speculations that the U.S. might restrict military aid in a bid to influence Israel's conduct in Gaza. VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Widakwaswara has this story.
Israel's military campaign in Gaza and its effect on Palestinian civilians has been the focus of international condemnation. EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs Joseph Borrell at the UN.
The natural way of providing support through roads is being closed, artificially closed, and starvation is being used as a war arm.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is defiant.
None of these pressures will stop us. Israel's very future, its very survival, is at stake.
But amid mounting casualties and starving Gazans, Israel's staunchest supporter, President Joe Biden, is losing patience. Here's what he said in an interview with MSNBC Saturday.
The defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have, but there's red lines that if he crosses and they cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going out. There's other ways to deal.
Biden is increasingly showing his frustration with Netanyahu, including over Israeli policies that slow down overland delivery of much-needed humanitarian aid. The U.S. has joined other countries to airdrop aid, and American troops are heading to the Mediterranean to build a temporary pier off the coast of Gaza to allow aid to arrive by sea from Cyprus. Washington continues to support Israel with military aid. But if Netanyahu goes against U.S. urging and invades Rafah, where more than a million Palestinians are sheltering, would Biden withhold sending American weapons to Israel? National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
We are working through it, and I'm not going to stand at this podium and entertain hypotheticals on it.
Ahead of the U.S. presidential election in November, Biden wants to avoid giving Republicans an opportunity to steal pro-Israel votes. But he also needs to stop progressive Democrats, young voters, and Muslim and Arab Americans from abandoning him because of his support for Israel. So while Biden embraced Netanyahu in the early days following Hamas' October 7 attacks, he's now distancing himself. Laura Blumenfeld is a Middle East analyst at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies.
So he's kind of performing a political amputation of Bibi.
Biden's actions appear to be driven by both domestic politics and foreign policy goals, said Blumenfeld.
Separate Netanyahu and what Biden considers his toxic war policies from the state of Israel so that he can continue his support of Israel, which is really in his gut, without sacrificing his moral core.
Recently, Israeli War Cabinet member Benny Gantz was received by Democratic lawmakers, Vice President Kamala Harris, and other top U.S. officials, a sign of the administration's support should the popular centrist politician become Israel's next prime minister. But whether Biden's shift on Netanyahu will be enough to appease Americans angry at the president's Gaza policies remains to be seen. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up what we prepared for you this Thursday, March 14, 2024. We now leave you with the song We Want Peace by Emmanuel Jal. We can reach through the bottom of the sea. That's why it's really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace. And we cannot change the way people act. And we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on, people, would you help me? Let's scream and shout, cause we want peace. To say the least, I dedicate this song to the common people. Caught in the middle of this common evil. I wish the world was a little bit better. Looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil's policeman. Fear make good genocide with Hitler so he can. Feel a war of genocide and I was weakened. Lighting up the land cause nobody was speaking. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on people, will you help me? Let's scream and shout cause we want peace. Say the least, somebody said after Rwanda, and after Rwanda, and not far from Rwanda, who's gonna shout for the poor people living in Darfur? The world gone deaf, the world gone blind, the world busy sitting down on the behind. Nobody cared about the poor and needy, too busy sucking up through the rich and the greedy. We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal and the song We Want Peace. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.